That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
Welcome to the Water Cooler, everybody. Happy Friday. We are glad you're with us. It's Friday, February 26, 2021. And look, if you're a conservative, the place to be today is Orlando, Florida. That is the scene of the big CPAC event. Conservative stars galore. They've descended onto the stage in the Sunshine State. This is like Disney World for conservatives, minus all the Disney political correctness, by the way. We have plenty of coverage today. Plus, I'm going to give you 10 bucks right now if you can tell me who this is. I'll Venmo you. Never mind, I'm not. I don't even have $10. I'm just going to tell you. She's the Senate parliamentarian, Elizabeth McDonough. And let me just say, Democrats are not happy with her after her so-called ruling about how their minimum wage proposal cannot be part of the COVID stimulus bill. We will dissect that. And Joe Biden's nominee to be assistant HHS secretary, under the microscope, Rachel Levine getting grilled over her previous support for allowing minors to be given hormone blockers to prevent them from going through puberty. Also, genital altering procedures and gender conversion therapies on children. Oy gavolt, we're covering it all. But first, CPAC. President Trump speaks Sunday. That's kind of a big speech. But today, some pretty good warm-up acts, including Senator Ted Cruz, who was in rare form.
Because I'm going to close with these words of encouragement. These are dark days, and the media tells us this is the new galactic empire forever and a thousand years. But already Joe Biden and the radicals in his administration, they are already overshooting. They are already going too far. Their policies don't work. They are disasters. They are bad. They are destroying jobs. They are stripping our freedom. And there is a natural pendulum to politics. And the country will come back to sanity. And mark my words, 2022 is going to be a fantastic election year. And so is 2024. As we stand together and defend liberty, defend the Constitution, defend the Bill of Rights of every American, in the immortal words of William Wallace, freedom!
I've got chills. Oh, my gosh. It's running all... Anyhow. All right. Let me just say, by the way, on CPAC, I hope conservatives have brought down there at CPAC these Mr. Potato Head toys with them in solidarity. Save Mr. Potato Head. You may have heard about how Hasbro is now going with the brand name Potato Head instead of Mr. Potato Head. Oh, don't even get me started. All right. We're going to talk about that later in the show. First to CPAC. I want to head down there. We're joined by the president of programming at Real America's Voice and host of Dr. Gina Primetime, Gina Loudon. Gina, great to see you. Have you here on the water cooler.
It's great to be with you. I was afraid you were going to introduce me as Mrs. Potato Head, just in light of the recent news.
No, Gina, but I'm sure you've been called worse, as have I, by the way. All right.
That's true.
Yeah,
Every day on social media.
Right, just go on Twitter, exactly. So what's the vibe down there, Gina? Can you give us a sense of what's happening down there?
You know, the vibe is fantastic, and I'll tell you, it is exactly as Senator Cruz said. There is a pendulum swing. You can feel it. If you remember back to the Obama days, it was Obama that gave us Donald Trump. And Donald Trump was really the culmination of what we were looking for at the foundation of the Tea Party. The Tea Party happened for years and years and really didn't have a leader. For a while, it was Andrew Breitbart, if you look back at Tea Party history. And then, unfortunately, Andrew Breitbart passed on. And then there was sort of no leader for a while of the real conservative movement that ultimately became MAGA because Donald Trump took the reins, and it was thanks to Obama. Donald Trump himself said many times, I'm here because of Obama. And I think that our next red wave will culminate thanks to the socialist totalitarianism we're seeing right now.
Yeah, I think that's great analysis, Gina, because that's exactly why Donald Trump became president for a lot of different reasons. But Obama was obviously a big part of that, the anti-Obama for sure. Let me ask you a little bit about, I'm assuming Mitt Romney, unless he wants apples thrown at him on the stage, will not be at CPAC or Mitch McConnell or any of the traditional Republicans like that.
Well, it's interesting who turned down the invitations. I think Nikki Haley wasn't asked. The vice president turned down the invitation, perhaps not knowing exactly with this red meat conservative crowd how he was going to be perceived. And so it was really interesting to me who came, who didn't come. And it is interesting, the change in guard here at CPAC. There used to be a lot more push and pull between the moderate faction and the more red meat conservative. The moderate faction isn't really here anymore. And it's interesting. If you look, you know who pointed this out to me, I should give credit. Carrie Sheffield actually had on her show an interview analyzing sort of Mitt Romney in Utah and his popularity with Democrats. I believe he's somewhere around 70 to 80% popularity with Democrats in Utah. The moderate Republican, the RINOs, popularity has really shifted to be mostly popular only with Democrats, and Republicans are really rejecting moderate Republicans these days. And so the base of Republicans have really become very, very conservative. And you're seeing that shift here at CPAC. Moderates not welcome. And that's interesting. That's a true shift that I've witnessed here this year.
Yeah, you know, we saw that shift over 10 years ago with the Tea Party. That really was kind of the beginning of saying, hey, enough, we need fiscal discipline and we need all of that. And we got Marco Rubio and we got others, you know, Mike Lee and Ted Cruz and all of that. So I'm wondering where the party goes from here. Are you hearing anything about a new Trump party, a Patriot party? I mean, what's kind of the scuttlebutt down there? Or is this all about having to make sure the Republican Party gets reshaped rather than broken into two?
Oh, that's a great question. I'm not hearing that. I was hearing a little bit of that right at the beginning of everything that took place after January 6th. I think you had some real disgruntled, base patriots that were really angry and wanted to sort of send a message to people like Lynn Cheney and that lot of people. I'm not hearing that at CPAC. I think what you're going to hear, and this is my prediction, I have no inside knowledge on this, but I think what you're going to hear from President Trump from the main stage at CPAC on Sunday is, I'm here, I'm not going anywhere, I am the leader of the Republican Party, and I think that will settle any of those third party questions that were sort of coming out of everything that took place around that January 6th time period.
Yeah, Gina, and I've known him, you've known him obviously a very long time. I've known him over a decade or so. I'm just wondering what his speech is going to be like. I guarantee he's going to make news, obviously, and it's probably going to be around 2 hours long, is my is my sense. But I am wondering about how much he needs to look forward, because the media is waiting for him to look back at the election results, and they're going to ding him on that if he spends too much time there.
You know, no one's going to script this former president, as you know, but the media is so starved, David, for Donald Trump to take a stage again, that you almost wonder they're going to be in this bizarre position of going, thank God Donald Trump is back in the news, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then wanting to bash him because it's just muscle reflex for them to do so. So they're going to definitely be in a quandary, aren't they? It's going to be almost fun to watch them speaking out of both sides of their mouth, trying to sort of almost egg him on and jab him where they can. But at the same time, please give us more, because Joe Biden won't even do a press briefing, right? So it'll be fun to watch.
Yeah, Joe Biden clearly out to lunch, literally out to lunch. I mean, I look at his press schedule every
literally
day, and he's having lunch, he's signing a couple things, he's going to bed by 7 o'clock. I mean, that's Joe Biden's schedule. It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. But I'm wondering about Texas. I mean, he's going down to Texas finally, and it's like, what took him so long, Gina?
Well, you know, I mean, it takes him a long time to shuffle along anywhere. He's got to get his peas all mashed. He's got to eat his ice cream. He's got to play with his dogs so the press can write about that. I mean, there's a lot of things on Joe's schedule every day.
Yeah, no, for sure. And that's what I did notice. I saw peas mashed on the schedule, so that's a good point. I didn't even take that into consideration. Good point. Hey, final question down there at CPAC. What do we expect tomorrow over the weekend besides Donald Trump? I mean, what's kind of like the theme? They usually have a big theme going on. What about Matt Schlapp, and what do they have going on down there?
Yeah, the theme is my favorite theme ever. It is conservatism uncanceled, or something right along those lines, and I think it's perfect. Mm-hmm. And I think it couldn't be better. You know, conservatives are tired of being canceled. We're tired of living in this totalitarian culture where they're telling us what we can wear on our faces. They're telling us where we can eat. They're telling us what we can say. They're taking away our platforms. They're telling us what we can drive with green energy. They're telling us whether or not our businesses can be open. They're telling us where we can travel. They're taking away the wall that protects the American people while they're putting a wall around the American capital, keeping Americans out of it. I mean, if this isn't the definition of socialism, I don't know what is, David. And I talk about this every night on my show at 7 p.m. And I'll continue to talk about it. I know you're talking about it. And that's why we have our own Ben Burquam down on the border pointing out news that no other networks are pointing out, David, because we're going to cover that news. Yep. That it seems like the rest of the media is just asleep with the wheel on. But we really are entering a cancel culture to the point that sometimes it seems even worse.
Yeah.
The level of cancel culture, yeah, than it is in some true totalitarian regimes that we're witnessing around the world.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's coming. I think we're there. And that's why we're going to point it out every single day here on RAV.
And that is why, that's when you drop the mic. Dr. Gina Loudon, boom, I'm out. CPAC, see you at Dr. Gina Primetime. Boom, watch it. It's an expensive mic. I know, we got to pay for it, right? Okay, Gina, great to see you. Thank you so much. Goodness gracious. When we come back, we're going to talk about what happened with Rand Paul, Senator Rand Paul, and Dr. Rachel Levine the other day. Get ready. Back in a moment.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome back to the Water Cooler, everybody. What a scene in the Senate, actually in one of the committee hearing rooms this week. Senator Rand Paul questioning the nominee to be the Assistant Health and Human Services Secretary, Rachel Levine, who is transgender. And he was asking Levine about some of her controversy, or some her, him, I'm sorry, transgender. I don't know. Am I going to get in trouble? You know, this is what it comes to. Cancel me. Go ahead and cancel me right in the middle of the segment. I don't care. Anyhow, he was talking to Levine about her support for some of these gender transition therapies, and about hormone blockers, and just some crazy stuff that the left is all into. And I want you to watch this.
I'm alarmed that you won't say with certainty that minors should not have the ability to make the decision to take hormones that will affect them for the rest of their life. Will you make a more firm decision on whether or not minors should be involved in these decisions?
Senator, transgender medicine is a very complex and nuanced field. And if confirmed to the position of Assistant Secretary of Health, I would certainly be pleased to come to your office and talk with you and your staff about the standards of care and the complexity of this field.
Let it go into the record that the witness refused to answer the question. The question is a very specific one. Should minors be making these momentous decisions? For most of the history of medicine, we wouldn't let you have a cut sewn up in the ER. But you're willing to let a minor take things that prevent their puberty, and you think they get that back? You give a woman testosterone enough that she grows a beard, you think she's going to go back looking like a woman when you stop the testosterone? You have permanently changed them. Infertility is another problem. None of these drugs have been approved for this. They're all being used off-label. I find it ironic that the left that went nuts over hydroxychloroquine being used possibly for COVID are not alarmed that these hormones are being used off-label. There's no long-term studies. We don't know what happens to them. We do know that there are dozens and dozens of people who've been through this who regret that this happened and a permanent change happened to them. And, you know, if you've ever been around children, 14-year-olds can't make this decision. In the gender dysphoria clinic in England, 10% of the kids are between the ages of 3 and 10. We should be outraged that someone's talking to a 3-year-old about changing their sex.
Hello, that's correct. Let's bring in Travis Weber with the Family Research Council. He's Vice President for Policy and Government Affairs. Travis, great to have you on the show.
Thank you very much.
What did you make of that exchange, and what should people understand about Rachel Levine and what some of the policies, I shouldn't say policies, but some of the positions that she's taken in the past?
Yeah, I mean, this exchange is very revealing. We've got to give kudos to Senator Paul for bringing up the issue. It's a tough issue, but he's shedding light on something people need to know about. This is occurring around the country, and it needs to be addressed legislatively. It's crucial that we understand that Levine, you know, advocated for this kind of thing in Pennsylvania and has given speeches advocating that children be given cross-sex hormones, puberty blockers, and the like. And, you know, in the exchange, refused to answer Rand Paul when he asked whether parental consent should be overridden. You know, so Levine's not even acknowledging that parents have a role in this process, leaving the kids, you know, out in the cold to deal with this stuff on their own. And as Rand Paul pointed out, there is tragedy here. People regret this when they go through it at a vulnerable spot in life when they're younger. We know from our work studying the issue of gender dysphoria, almost 98% of men who have gender dysphoria or attractions of identifying with the opposite biological sex in their youth eventually grow out of that when they reach adulthood. We know the issue needs more attention than it's getting. I'm glad Rand Paul pointed this out. And people need to know this is the kind of nominee that President Biden is putting forth and wants helping run the Health and Human Services Department.
Yeah, and Travis, and the fact that Levine wouldn't answer the question is an answer in and of itself.
No, absolutely. I mean, twice. You know, refusing to answer the question, twice looking robotic, like giving a canned answer that someone wrote on notes probably. You know, and no doubt caught off guard by Rand Paul's bold question. The left's not, you know, expecting conservatives to stand up for these tough issues. Sometimes. Kudos to Rand Paul for doing that. So much so that Patty Murray had to come in later and offer some kind of lame defense of Levine, saying that, you know, Rand Paul was picking on her. Rand Paul's asking a question. You can't answer that question of a legit public policy issue that we need to deal with in America. Sorry, that's unacceptable.
Yeah, and here's the thing, Travis. Once again, here we are. The left is going to do it again. They always want to overreach. And here's an example, the whole thing with female athletes, you know, transgenders competing against female athletes. I mean, I can't imagine any of this goes well in the suburbs of America, you know, many of the suburbs of America. But, you know, maybe in L.A. and New York and at the Washington Times and the Washington Post and New York Times. But how this plays in Peoria, it just seems like they push the envelope just again and again.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, this is a war on biology and common sense. Mm-hmm. And all Rand Paul's doing is shedding light on something people need to know more about. This is why, I mean, we're very keen on addressing this. We think it needs to be addressed. There's a bill introduced in Arkansas this week, this Wednesday, that would address this at the state level. 28 similar bills around the country moving to address the issue that Rand Paul is bringing up. We need to address it legislatively. It's key that people understand the issue.
So when you say legislatively, what would the legislation do, in essence, at the state level? What are you trying to do?
So there are variations on these among these bills, sure. But basically we think that, you know, our tax dollars should not be going to fund gender transition procedures for children. And that includes, you know, a host of different things, cross-sex hormones, puberty blockers, physiological interventions, including top and bottom surgery. And this is where, you know, people start to talk about children being mutilated or mutilating themselves. All that, you know, none of that should be funded by the taxpayer. And frankly, you know, when it comes to children, we need to look at banning these procedures outright. The other element is we need, you know, parents involved in decision making. In no way should parents be cut out of this process. All these issues are important to address legislatively. In Ohio, you know, there was a case where a custody was taken away from parents because they objected to their child child's desire to transition, try to transition to the opposite biological sex. Judge took parental custody away. All these things need to be addressed, you know, and there are variations of these bills in the states. The Arkansas one is a good one because it does it comprehensively. There's one in Alabama moving as well, but I'd say we need to look at all these things.
Well, Travis Weber, really appreciate you coming on and giving us some of that information. It needs to get out there, and I really appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right. And by the way, did I miss something? Democrats are pro-choice, right? Madison, right? They're pro-choice. So they're pro-choice. So here's the thing. Parents want to decide for their kids what's best, and now the government is going to say, no, you're not pro-choice in that situation. They want to override it? Come on. Hypocrisy is ridiculous. Dave Brack, Dean of Economics at Liberty University, talking about the minimum wage when we come back.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Welcome back to the water cooler, everybody. The minimum wage on hold right now. Democrats wanted to shove it into that COVID-19 stimulus bill. And as you can see, justthenews.com, the Senate parliamentarian says that $15 per hour minimum wage hike and relief bill, unacceptable under the rules, according to the Senate parliamentarian. Chuck Schumer decided, uh-oh, we got a problem. Anyhow, we're going to talk about that and a lot of stuff with Dave Brack, who's back on the show, Dean of Economics at Liberty University. Dave, great to see you, sir.
Hey, thanks for having me on, David.
Well, the minimum wage, give me your reaction to the what's happening in Congress right now. Democrats are in a pickle. They're going to probably try to figure out a way to jam it in somehow, but they got problems with the parliamentarian.
Yeah, and we ran into those same problems, and so that usually is always a leadership question. And so, you know, when Biden is hinting that it's not going to go through on reconciliation, that's probably the big hint. So it's probably not going to go through. They can't break the 60 vote threshold because of Manchin and the senator from Arizona.
Oh, Sinema. Sinema,
right, who's holding strong on principle, and she's a very smart person. And so, you know, differ on ideology, but it shows you got interesting folks on both sides. Yeah. But the issue itself, I mean, it's just mind-numbing right now when the bailout bill now, they're giving federal workers relief for education. The same time, you're going to further hurt the industries that are going bankrupt, right? In Richmond, Virginia, all the foodies and the pubs and the restaurants, the retail, the hotels, they're all in the tank. And you're going to hit them with a $15 piece that they just cannot handle. And but they don't care, right? And so that the key piece you got to get through is the Marxist logic is the accumulation of power. It's not about raising your wage rate. It's not about helping your kid in school. It's not about truth, justice, and the American way. The liberals used to believe in some of that stuff. And those debates were fine. You know, the scope of government, the hard left right now it's about the accumulation of power. And you can read every single issue you look at, just read it through that lens, and it'll make perfect sense.
I want to come back to the minimum wage, but let's put up that article we just had about what you talked about, what's tucked inside this COVID-19 stimulus bill.
Yeah.
21,000, they could get up to 20,000 in enhanced paid leave to federal workers with children out of school. And basically, the devil is in the details, because basically what this is saying, if I understand this, Dave, is that even if parents have their kids back in school, they can still qualify. It doesn't have to be virtual. Like, this isn't like helping parents out, you know, because there's a hardship here. The kids could be back in school and they could still be getting a check.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's just like, you know, Zuckerberg miraculously statistically picking the six key states to invest in.
Right.
So that's your power play, right? And so what's going on here? Well, you couldn't pick a better cohort of Democrat voters. And so they're clever. They're just shooting money to Democrat voters to say, this is how we pay you back and make sure we maintain our hold on power across all the key sectors. They socialized healthcare. They got big tech on board now. There's not much they don't have. They own all of culture. And that's the piece that really matters, right? The Hollywood people, the news people, the media people that have a huge impact. And so the Republicans, we got to start doing better on the culture ourselves.
Dave, with your experience in Congress, do you think Democrats or Congress overall will get any sort of minimum wage bill passed kind of unilaterally? In other words, do you think there's support in Congress from a Republican standpoint for maybe not a $15, obviously not a $15 minimum wage increase, but like Romney's proposing $10 minimum wage? What do you think? What's your sense of the politics there?
Yeah, I think that's dangerous enough that it could work. Again, it's not the level, it's the message you're sending is that we're not using the market and the price system anymore, right? Just like with the solar panels, everything's going via DC. So I think Manchin also mentioned maybe $11 is in his target window. And so, you know, something that number maybe does get through. But then, you know, it's all ratcheted above that. So if you do that at 11, it's not just 11. It's that then the people that were making 11 demand 15, and then 15s want 18. So that's the issue.
You know, as we wrap up here, I want to put up a list of some pros and cons that we have put together. And let's go with the pros first. And I want to get your take on this. Obviously, the pros of raising it would increase economic activity, spur job growth. It would increase the minimum wage. Increasing the minimum wage would reduce poverty. These are the pros. These are the Democrats, what they would say. And they would also say that a higher minimum wage would reduce government welfare spending. What do you think of those arguments by the Democrats on this?
Well, the first one is the most problematic. Raising the minimum wage does not increase economic activity or spur job growth. It does the opposite, right? The market is the innovator. And you have to let the market run. There are hardly any markets left, right? What the left wants, again, through the Marxist prism, they want a few firms in every industry, preferably one that they can control. So big tech, they got monopolies. Healthcare is a monopoly just across every industry, right? So that's what they're doing. What they can control firms better. So this is going to put the small guy out of business. That's got ups and downs, right? It bankrupts the small guy, and then the big guys maybe sustain it, and then they control the big guys. Same story every day.
Yeah, and let's put up the cons as it relates to why we shouldn't be doing this and raising the minimum wage. Here they are. Increasing the minimum wage would force businesses, obviously, to lay off employees and raise unemployment levels. Also, an increase would hurt businesses, force companies to close, and also raising it would increase the price of consumer goods. I'm assuming this is talk to me about this.
No, It's backwards. It's the opposite of any Econ 101 textbook. When Greenspan and Bernanke were both interviewed after the 08 economic debacle, they're asked, what's the greatest harm to the economy from this thing? And they said the loss of productivity at the low skill levels. It's not the wage rate that matters. It's getting that kid their first job where they learn to set an alarm clock, get up in the morning, do things right at the first job. I started bussing tables, waited for 5 years, did all the normal stuff. That's where you learn your personal skills. You learn how to work under a boss, how to take orders, and how to become productive. And then you can move up, up, up in the world, right? I started at a bus point. I ended up in Congress somehow. So that's the missing part. It's not about the wage rate.
And that's why we need you on the show. Dave Bratt, great to see you. Thanks for setting us and everyone straight here on the minimum wage. Appreciate you, sir.
Thanks, Dave. You bet. God bless, brother. Thank you.
All right. Dave Bratt with a lot of good information from an economic standpoint. And by the way, he's got a lot of other issues he can talk about. But, you know, hey, we go right to the bread and butter, if you will. When we come back, here's a question for you. Will Donald Trump maybe run not for president, but for Congress, for Senate? Could it be possible? We're going to discuss that possibility. Is it rare? We'll see. Talk about it in a moment.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Welcome back to the Water Cooler, everybody. A CPAC, the big story today. It'll be the bigger story even over the weekend when Donald Trump speaks on Sunday. I think CPAC stands for Conservatives Pretty Angry Currently. That's what I think CPAC stands for, at least in 2021. They are ticked off. I mean, we heard Ted Cruz yelling before from CPAC. We've had quite the theatrics and fireworks. And Trump hasn't even spoken yet. Wait for that. All right, so let's play a little bit more of CPAC. This is James Lankford, the senator from Oklahoma. He's a lot more mellow, but very, very smart in talking about religious liberty under attack.
Last year, I was seated on the lawn of the White House, getting a sunburn because I'm a redhead, watching President Trump in the leadership of Israel, UAE, and Bahrain sign the Abraham Accords. The first Middle East peace treaty in decades. And as I sat there on the South Lawn watching the ceremony, I sat reading the Abraham Accords. I don't know if you've read that peace treaty, but here's how the Abraham Accords begin. We, the undersigned, recognize the importance of maintaining and strengthening peace in the Middle East and around the world based on mutual understanding and coexistence, as well as respect for human dignity, freedom, including religious freedom. Did I mention that was signed by Israel, United Arab Emirates, and Bahrain? Freedom is breaking out in the Middle East while the left is trying to shut it down in America, but they cannot do that because we are Americans and we have the greatest constitution in the world.
He's absolutely right. That's Senator James Lankford. By the way, I want his voice. What a voice. Got some depth and resonance. It's like, Ursula and Little Mermaid. I want your voice. Let's bring in Fred Lucas, Chief National Affairs Correspondent of the Daily Signal. He's also author of the book, The Abuse of Power, Inside the Three-Year Campaign to Impeach Donald Trump. Fred, always great to see you, sir.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Well, Fred, let's talk a little bit about this article you wrote, op-ed, that you wrote about Donald Trump and his future. I'll let you take it from here, but here's the headline. Far-fetched plan for Donald Trump's future sort of makes sense. Why don't you take us through this?
Okay, yeah, sure. A big part of it is I'm making the point that while most people are speculating that Donald Trump is aiming to be the next Grover Cleveland by winning non-consecutive presidential terms, there is a chance out there and there's chatter that he might be looking at being the next John Quincy Adams or maybe even the next Andrew Johnson, in the sense that both of those guys actually went to Congress after serving in the White House. And it's certainly in the case of John Quincy Adams, had a very influential career in Congress. So, this is something that, I mean, it might seem very unlikely, but it would offer Donald Trump an avenue to have a complete platform. He wouldn't have the same responsibilities that he had as president, but he would have this platform for national rallies. To keep that following, keep the MAGA agenda that he cares about going. And this would be something that would keep him in the spotlight and keep that agenda forward. So it's not unthinkable, and it has been done before.
Well, I don't think there's any question about if he wants to run for any sort of Senate seat in Florida, or if he wants to, like Rubio, not that he's going to primary Rubio, he's not going to do that. But I mean, if he wanted to, he could win. I mean, he could win. And also in the House, I mean, talk to me about a House situation, because everybody thinks, the U.S. House, why would he want to be in the House of Representatives? But you come to an interesting conclusion as it relates to what that could eventually mean in terms of the power that he might yield one day.
Well, Steve Bannon, he's former advisor, and we don't even know that they're on speaking terms at all. Trump pardoned him on the last day, of course. But Steve Bannon suggested that he could become Speaker of the House immediately. And then from Bannon's point of view, push for the impeachment of Joe Biden. Whether that's advisable or not, I don't know. But that is something, a pathway in which he could go if he wanted to get into the House leadership. As far as where he would run, Right now, he's in South Florida and Palm Beach County. It would probably be tough to win a seat in a very heavily Democratic area, even for a former president. But he could all, you know, wealthy people have been known to move and relocate into different congressional districts. There's a Jay Rockefeller notion that this was a New York liberal who had $1 billion. He just wanted to go somewhere to buy a Senate seat, so he moved to West Virginia and managed to do it there. Trump could easily go into a state where he won overwhelmingly in the presidential races of 2016 and 2020, set up residence, run for Senate. He could go into the panhandle of Florida and probably win a U.S. House seat pretty easily there, or any number of House districts that he won by around 90% or so during the 2016 and 2020 elections.
You know, Fred, it doesn't obviously take a rocket scientist to figure out that Donald Trump wants to be the big enchilada no matter where he is, for sure. And obviously, I've known him over a decade. It seems hard for me to believe that he would entertain any sort of House seat or even a Senate seat. I know that's it's unconventional. I mean, you're saying it's unconventional, but yeah, I would think that he's going 2024 or bust.
Yeah. What's that?
I think he's probably going 2024 or bust.
That seems like the most logical explanation, but and that seems like where he's heading. What we're hearing is that he's going to declare himself the presumptive nominee for 2024. I keep bringing former presidents up. Looks like he's going to go the Andrew Jackson route after Jackson lost the 1924 election. 1824 election.
Yeah, right.
He essentially said, "I was robbed," and spent the next 4 years campaigning. He was immediately nominated for president by the Tennessee legislature after that. Yeah. So things worked differently then, but.
Well, Fred, I appreciate you coming on. And when you said presumptive nominee, that he might say something along those lines, you're talking about it at his speech at CPAC on Sunday.
Yes, right.
Yeah. Okay. Fred, appreciate you joining us. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
All right. And, you know, he's got it's interesting information for sure. But look, I think as we go through, and there's his book, Abuse of Power, Fred Lucas, it's being sold wherever books are sold, Amazon.com and all of that jazz. But look, reality is this. Donald Trump is going to have a big speech on Sunday. The question is, how much is he going to look forward? How much is he going to look back? I can guarantee you it's going to make news, clearly. And I bet you it goes 2 hours or even north of 2 hours back in a moment.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey, welcome back to the water cooler, everybody. Time now for, I got it, the last sip. All right, here's what we're going to start with. Poor Mr. Potato Head. That's right, Mr. Potato Head. Now, you may have heard by now, but Hasbro is rebranding Mr. Potato Head as just Potato Head. They say, don't worry, they're still going to sell Mr. Potato Head and Mrs. Potato Head separately, but the brand is now just called Potato Head. Well, I have a better word. How about changing the name of the Hasbro company to a bunch of stupid heads? This is insane. This isn't just about political correctness here, folks. I mean, obviously, it's a so-called politically correct attempt to be inclusive. We got that, all that jazz. But come on, folks, we're not stupid. This is all about the kids, the next generation, reshaping America. And the way you do that is you start with the kid. You get them when they're young. And hey, parents, are you listening? They're coming after your kids. That's right, your little boys and girls. I said it, boys and girls, two genders. If you don't believe me, by the way, ask God or crack open a Bible. Here's what GLAAD says about the move. This is Mr. Potato Head's reaction. No, just kidding. But this is what GLAAD says. Quote, Hasbro is helping kids to simply see toys as toys, which encourages them to be their authentic selves outside of the pressures of traditional gender norms. Well, look, folks, let me just say it straight. That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. First of all, if toys are just toys, as the GLAAD spokesman just said, then leave the toy alone. Leave Mr. Potato Head alone. He didn't offend anyone. He's just a toy. He's just a potato. Actually, he's not even a potato. He's a plastic potato. And also, how in the world does a gender-neutral toy encourage kids to be their authentic selves outside the pressures of traditional gender norms? That's a bunch of gobbledygook nonsense. So let me get this straight. If a child sees a male Mr. Potato Head, then that's going to severely affect a child's decision on what gender to morph into? I mean, is it me? Am I crazy? It's not me. It's them. And who are them exactly, all right? It's not just Hasbro. It's every single out-of-control liberal who thinks they are moving this country forward with this nonsense. This isn't moving the country forward, folks. This is dividing the country. Look, we need to have compassion and concern for those struggling with their sexual identity. Absolutely. But you don't solve anything whatsoever by changing the name of a plastic potato. All you're doing is deepening the divisions that already exist in this country, and in the end, all of this is a fight to protect the Judeo-Christian values that made America strong from its very beginning. So it's not about a potato. It's about the soul of America. It's a battle for the soul of America. And that's not small potatoes.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome back to the Water Cooler, everybody. As you just saw there, CPAC 2021 all weekend long. The big speech comes Sunday, Donald Trump, 3:40 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 1:40. What was that? What kind of sound effect was that? That's 1:40 p.m. Pacific Time if you're in California. And if you are, say hi to Gavin Newsom. All right, it's time for the poll of the day.
The Water Cooler. Poll of the day.
I'm going to be honest with you. Even before we get to the poll of the day, I mean, you can put it up, but I like this music. I'll tell you what. That's like Gloria Estefan and Miami Sound Machine, FYI. All right. Do you have a favorable or an unfavorable opinion of each of the following individuals? Hey, look at that. Nancy Pelosi, not shocking that she has a 53% unfavorable opinion, but 36% have a favorable opinion of Nancy Pelosi? Where are these people? I guess they're Democrats, clearly. They ain't Republicans. Kevin McCarthy at 25%. We showed you that figure yesterday, but now the poll showing Kevin McCarthy versus Nancy Pelosi. It's like Roe v. Wade. Not really. What am I talking about? Anyhow, Kevin McCarthy at 25%, a lower favorable rating than Nancy Pelosi, in my sense of that is. I mean, here's my on-the-spot analysis. My sense of it is that Kevin McCarthy kind of tied in with Trump and the Republican Party, and they're going through a lot of stuff right now. You know what? Give it a couple of years. Actually, give it less than a couple of years, because 2022, just around the corner. Believe it or not, I know it's 2021, but guess what? 2022 races in the House and in the Senate, they're already starting, or I shouldn't say the Senate so much, but the House for sure, starting to gear up really right now. So it'll be interesting to see if Kevin McCarthy's approval number continues to, or actually jumps back up and becomes more favorable as we get closer to 2022. Remember, Republicans have an excellent shot at taking back the U.S. House of Representatives in 2022. And Donald Trump, oh, by the way, is going to be on the campaign trail. So that'll be interesting. All right, that does it for us. Now, I will tell you, next week, a little programming note, big week. Tommy Lahren will be here on Tuesday. Hey, guess who's going to stop by on Wednesday? Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, the former Secretary of State, but obviously he's got a lot to say on internal affairs. International affairs. He'll be here next week. Hope you join us. Have a great weekend, everybody. Don't eat too much. I will.